Good morning, everyone. Time now for the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio. We ask that you hold your phone calls until after the top of the hour news. In the meantime, though, if you want to jot that phone number down now, it's 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live. Our guest today from the city of Grants Pass, City Manager Aaron Kubik, and Fire Chief Jimmy Sanchez. Gentlemen, welcome to the microphones of KAJO.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
So far, so good. All right, well, let's get this one thing out of the way first. Is everybody happy with the outcome of the Super Bowl?
Yes, I am. I was rooting for the Seahawks.
Okay, and?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay, all right. Well, you're all living in the right place then.
Yeah.
No doubt about it. Get that all out of the way. First of all, what's on your agenda, Aaron?
Well, you know, one of the things that we've been talking about through the community or questions that have been asked of me pertains to council's recent policy direction to hire 12 additional FTE, 6 additional firefighters and 6 additional police officers. And that's also come up because we're starting to talk budget. And so one of the things we're going to talk about here in the next month is we'll be talking about funding those positions also and what that looks like from a long-term perspective. As those discussions happen, there's been a number of questions either from council members or from the public on, well, how are we doing with hiring those individuals? Is that, where are we with that? Have we hired the firefighters? Have we hired the police officers? And so I thought it'd be really good for the public, because that's what I'm hearing as questions, that we bring in Chief Sanchez, and he could talk a little bit about the onboarding of the 6 FTE that he was provided through the budget process and through council's policy direction, and where we are with that. Police is a little bit different, but from a fire perspective, I think the chief has a good story to tell on how we're bringing online those individuals.
All right. Well, Chief, once again, thank you for your time this morning and for your efforts every day. We see you out there. Now, of the 6, do we have all 6 on board yet? What's the status?
So I'm really excited to say this, and I wanted to thank the city manager, the X team, and then the council for the unanimous approval of this moving forward. So we started the process right away when we got that approval about almost 7 months ago now.
Yeah,
which was really exciting. We are scheduled to start all 6 on February 23rd of this month. So we will start them on that Monday. We will run 8 weeks of consecutive academy, training them, getting them all familiarized with our crews, with how we do business here in Grants Pass, familiarization with our city, our training with our ladder truck. All of our guys come in, they take part of that. I want to give credit to my deputy chiefs, both of them as well, that have helped bring this on, HR. They've been through the full background process, all of our psych medical evaluations, just as you would expect from our team and our high standards here that we have in the city. And we're excited to bring them on. Now, the amazing part about this, the fantastic thing that we get to celebrate with this is filling that gap that we spoke about before. So we've had, with the increase in paid leave Oregon and with the time off and the overtime, our guys have just been working so much just to keep the bare minimum staffing. Once these guys are fully online, it's going to help alleviate that stress. So when they start after February 23rd, 8 weeks after that, they are going to be online with our guys. They'll be on probation for a year, but we expect great things. These are members of our surrounding community in Southern Oregon as well. So you guys will be seeing some familiar faces that chose to come work at Grants Pass Fire and Rescue. So we're excited to have them.
Tell me about the hiring process from the time that you got the yes, go ahead. What was the next step and how did it lead to today?
So what was really exciting about it is that we took off right away. We did everything followed within policy, and we worked with HR. We got the hiring process posted. We had everybody apply. We had just over 100 applicants for 6 positions, which was great. Then we narrowed it down through testing, National Testing Network, and brought it into a certain, we interviewed over 35 candidates, and then brought it down to just under 11 to 12 candidates that we went and brought to the chief's interviews. They went to, then after that, they did their physical agility, which they have to go in, they do a firefighter's challenge, essentially, is the best way to describe it to the public. And they go and they do stairs, they pull a dummy, they climb our ladder, our 110-foot ladder, and they force entry, they do a confined search, all those things in a firefighter challenge that you'll see that we have lined out in our CBA as well. And once they do that, then they go into our background check. And our background check here is one of the best things, I believe, for some people like to comment that it's too much or too in-depth, but really it makes sure that the reason we have such the amazing professionals that we do is because our background investigators in our check, not only does it just include a psych eval, but they go, they talk to your neighbors, they talk to your in-laws. When I got hired here as well, they did the same thing, and they go back not just your recent neighbors. They go back previous homes, even if you're out of state, and they make sure that we're getting a quality candidate, and that's what we did here. And that's how we got these six that are coming to get hired on with us. So we're really excited about the six that are coming on and starting with us here on this weekend.
Now, these six, do any have any previous experience in firefighting?
Yes. Two of them are from local areas, Applegate, Royal Metro, and they've bounced around between that, Rogue River, and they've all bounced around some D3 volunteer time. So all of Southern Oregon, all this area, they know it. They live here. They're from here, so which is an added benefit to us as well because they know the area, they know the people, and they have that love and that compassion here for the community to serve. And that's why they came to us, because they know what we have here in Grants Pass Fire and Rescue.
All right. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, you're going to bring these people on the 23rd of this month.
Yes, sir.
And then they'll have 8 weeks of additional training here?
8 weeks of additional training. I got to give a shout out to our team. We have Captain Thompson and Firefighter Bracken Sharp as well, locals as well here. They're going to be putting on the academy along with our Deputy Chief of Operations, pushing them through. Now, they learn everything from how our trucks are packed, how we go in and save down firefighters, how we operate on a structure fire from a first alarm to a second alarm with our mutual aid, and working seamlessly with Rural Metro and then call-outs to RV1 and RV2 going over to Jackson County for wildfire. So we go through all of that with them, our EMS as well, and those components in that training. So when they hit the ground with us and they come to shift full-time, they're ready to integrate with the team and be a full-fledged member.
Now, during this training period, what kind of assistance are they to you immediately? Once we're during the training period, during this 8 weeks, are they alleviating any of that stress that you referred to?
So no, unfortunately, in the first 8 weeks, they are not alleviating that stress. They are alleviating the stress in terms of if we had a major disaster, they are certified and trained, and we will be able to use them in some manner, in some form for that. To alleviate
traffic control, yes, or something like
something,
that.
Something, yes, mm-hmm. Along those lines. But that main focus in the first 8 weeks is to get them fully fledged within our policies and procedures and how our city operates.
All right. What's that done to the morale around the stations?
Our team is excited about it. They've been looking forward. I know since the last time we did hiring was in 2007. Was with the increase, so they are really excited about this increase. And it also helps with the morale and with their work-life balance. Because, as I said when I did this presentation with the council, they're on average over 200 hours of overtime, 300 hours of overtime, depending on which rank you are, a year that they're required to do for minimum staffing. So this will help alleviate them coming back. It'll also help alleviate some of our overtime budget as well, because now we're just going to have the staff. So the fatigue, the burnout, all that. So the morale has been really positive with the crews.
All right. Tell me about minimum staffing then. Now, what are we looking at?
So our minimum staffing currently is 7. So the way that works is we have 3 fire stations. We have Parkway Fire Station, we have Hillcrest, and then we have Redwood. And if we're at minimum staffing, we have 1 battalion chief and then 2 individuals at each station. So for a total of 7. With these individuals, with 6, what we'll be able to do more often than not, we will have 3-man fire engines because we're adding 2 to each shift. We have 3 shifts, A, B, and C. So we went from having 2. This also helps create an environment to where we were having to call 2 engines to go on a code, for an example. So, you know, when somebody goes down, you have to do CPR and it's a full code. Now we'll have 3 individuals with a battalion chief, 4 showing up with 1 unit. So that alleviates 2 units being dedicated to a call and allows us to respond to other calls at the same time. So we have increased our capability after these guys, they're trained.
It's once again, once yes. they're trained, after, yes. the, after the 8
after
weeks.
After the 8 weeks, we'll be able to increase our capability of responding to more calls simultaneously than being dedicated to just 1.
All right. Well, obviously, that's had a contributing factor to morale. Next question, is 6 enough?
So 6, with the original studies that were done 3 times by an independent consultant that the city has paid for in the past, they recommended 12. But 6 is the first step in a tiered approach. As we evaluate everything from the budget with the city manager and the staff as well, this is the first step, and it's a great one. Nothing that I want to say anything negative about other than that we are really excited. And then after this will provide us with the real data to show what's next and how we're going to accomplish that. But 12 was the mark and the number based off of the matrix to make this. But this does not change, however, this doesn't change our minimum staffing, and I want to make that clear. because if this changed our minimum staffing, then it would really increase our overtime and everything else. We'd be in the same boat with more people. So our minimum staffing is still going to be 7, but we have more people in line that are be filling that day. So those 3-man engines are more often than not than just 2, which right. really increases our public safety.
Aaron, I saw you nodding your head over there when he said he wants 6 more. You're like, okay.
Yes.
He just got 6, now he wants 6 more.
Yeah. Well, we've, like the chief said, we had a study that was done, an independent study that shows that really optimal staffing levels would require another 6. Mm-hmm. And that would provide for more of a 3 to an engine staffing level. And we're just not quite there yet. As the chief mentioned, this is a good step to gather the appropriate data to see exactly how these additional 6 impact our service levels. And I think that from a policy perspective, the council was spot on to do what they did to provide the 6 for fire and to provide the 6 for police. I think police also, the study mentioned having more also, but this is a good way to go about doing this because we may be able to do more with less than the study was recommending. And that's what our hope is. The 6 definitely is relieving a lot of pressure and helping morale. There's a lot of wonderful things happening in the fire department. There's a lot of young families that are around. We've got Paid Leave Oregon that provides opportunities for people to spend time with their families, which creates vacancies, which means having that additional 6 to help fill those roles is extremely important. So it's not only a service level issue that the community is going to see and realize more. It's also just from an operational perspective, it makes things flow much better, and it does help morale, and it does reduce burnout.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we've got City Manager Aaron Kubik and Fire Chief Jimmy Sanchez here, and we're going to take a little pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Tuesday Talk Show in progress right now. City Manager Aaron Kubik and Fire Chief Jimmy Sanchez. I apologize for that.
I made the better choice. No offense to Chief Hensman, but you know, fire is the best.
Is there a friendly competition there? I know there's a competition there, but you
there's always competition between police and fire at all levels, I think.
All right.
That's why the Chief isn't here. Team, yes.
Okay, all right. And we cover some of those. I know the blood drives.
Yes.
At any rate,
mm-hmm.
You know, I do want to mention one of the things when it comes to, and we could talk about the implications of the additional 6 and what we're looking at, and the chief can respond to those kind of things. But when we started talking about adding the 12, one of the things that we still need to resolve is the financial aspect of that impact. But I wanted to talk just briefly, just mention, once we got the green light to go, and Chief Sanchez mentioned the background checks and all that kind of thing. We have a really good internal system to make sure that we get quality colleagues and boots on the ground once we find out who are of our individuals that have applied are best for the city. But I do want to mention, and I think it's important, I want to shout out to Kim and Tony and Faye in our HR department. There was a lot of flexing that occurred during this time because hiring 12 FTE all at once is a big deal for a city our size. And we're down an FTE right now in HR. And we were able to accommodate Chief Sanchez and Chief Hensman and City Council's goals of trying to get these people online ASAP. And without the 3 of their help making this happen, we would have been in a different situation. So we were able to get Chief Sanchez to have all 6 of his new firefighters coming on board and going through a training program all on the same day. And I think that was very helpful. And again, I want to say thank you to Tony, Kim, and Faye for helping out with that process.
I would like to echo that as well. What he said there is very true. It was a lot of work for them suddenly.
All right. Well, at least they're chosen. They'll be coming on board very, very soon. All of that is good news. And to get that extra 12, from what I understand, Chief, from what Aaron just laid out, we're going to be checking everything and seeing how the system works for the next year to see if we really need an extra 6 or if an extra 2 or 4 might do the job and how to fund all that. So that all lands on your shoulders, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. So I believe last time I was here, I said I opened my big mouth, so now I have to deliver.
Oh, okay.
So that's one of the things I've city manager has heard me say before. One of the exciting things about it, actually some of the recent numbers and stuff that we're doing as well that we're expanding upon, but we're going to be using all of that. I told them as well that you would see a minimum of a 20% in overtime savings. I believe there's going to be more that I'll be able to show as well because of our minimum staffing with paid leave Oregon, which I appreciate the city manager mentioning as well. With that comes a lot of time off. And one of the nice things and a great metrics to show, too, on the other side of that coin, too, while there's a lot of time off and that we're trying to manage that and staff that, there's a positive metric, too, is our new firefighters, our younger firefighters are having and growing families, which means that they're taking time off, but that also means that they're feeling secure in their jobs here and wanting to work here a long time, and they feel they're going to be able to support their families. So that's a positive metric as well to look at. But providing all of this data and putting this together, one of the things that, too, while we did this, which I'm grateful for the council and state manager, too, is if you guys have noticed, there's been a lot of EMS calls in our community and with ambulance service, and a lot of times our guys are there for a while before the ambulance services company can come and show up. With that being said, with this allows us to respond more in the community instead of that lag time. And the expansion of our EMS capabilities as well has been taken on by our team before this even started. With this new add-on, we're going to be able the full capability minus the transport. Before, we were there and we would help out, and sometimes we had to wait for the ambulance service company to show up to administer certain drugs. Now, while our guys are fully trained and capable paramedics and capable on the same protocols to do that, now we have taken the necessary steps and partnered with our medical director that we are going to be fully capable coming online here soon to manage that as well. We also are growing with this as well. We're exploring other forms of revenue. One of them being, we are almost fully done with setting up a REMS team, which is our rapid extrication module support, which you'll see around these wildfires like Board Shanty and stuff. They always call in a REMS team, which is a team of at least four individuals. And we show up and we go get down firefighters or injured patients that you wouldn't be able to get one of the ambulance or a regular fire crew going in there, from high angle rescue to down the side of a mountain. Just technical rescues that they're able to pull out. Now, there's revenue streams from that. There's contracts that you set up and you go out on deployments. And then since 2025, for instance, we've got a total reimbursement of about $153,000 from OSFM. So these are the revenue streams that we haven't traditionally done in the past. Now, that doesn't mean that's all positive gain that we get reimbursed for our overtime, but there is a number and the amount that we get back to help supplement buying some equipment. This doesn't pay for, but these are things we're exploring as well as taking into account the EMS portion of it and to build upon this system and reevaluate in a year to see where we are. So I can provide him with the good data and the solid numbers so we can make that informed decision for the taxpayers in our city.
So Chief, one of the things, Chief and I, we meet on a regular basis, have one-on-ones, and I love the way he talks. He just goes to town and he'll throw out acronyms to me that I'm like, what? My head is spinning sometimes with all the stuff that he deals with. But you did mention the reimbursement that we get. It comes from OSFM. Can you tell us who OSFM is?
Yes, sorry. So the Oregon State Fire Marshal's Office. So when a conflict happens an emergency, for instance, what you guys saw at the flat fire this year, which was a big one that made the news, we had a team out there. We had a team out there for 2 weeks. One of the awesome things, too, is we have a Type 3R white engine that you see traveling around the city. That is from OSFM. That is from the Oregon State Fire Marshal's Office. We got that for free through a grant program, but also one of those expected uses for it is we deploy that Type 3 when called upon as well, because we got it for free. We get to use that here and protect our city, but also deploy that team. So they reimburse us for our guys to go that are highly trained to do it from our overtime expense for the ones that are on the fire, our overtime expense for the ones that are here within our city, and then they reimburse an hourly rate for our equipment that we're using. So we make money on that and everything that's there from that. And it's not a money tree by any means, but it's another form of trying to recoup some of the costs that it costs to do public safety, since it is one of the most expensive things to do. But it is one of the most important things we do for our community is that public safety aspect.
And it also provides an excellent opportunity for our firefighters to get additional experience in different situations, which is a real key too.
Mm-hmm. Do you have that specialized rescue team ready right now, the four-man team? Is that active?
So the REMS team is very close to being within the next few months. Battalion Chief Travis Marsh has been given that direction by me and my deputy chiefs. We have the new UTV, which we got. which is the specialized vehicle that has a wildland rig in it as well, that we already rescued somebody off Dollar Mountain for, put out some local fires. And then we have the equipment. A majority of our guys are already trained in the technical rescue aspect of it. There's a few more to tick off to make sure we have that bench, so to speak, for whenever we call. So if someone's on call versus someone's out on vacation, so we'll have that bench. So we are, before the conflict season, I would argue we would be fully ready to go, yes.
All right. How does that work? Is there you work along with search and rescue? Is there a dialogue between the two organizations?
So there's a so you can be going with ODF, the federal team, or the state team. So depending on where you're needed, it can go from any one of those avenues. So if there's a national, presidential disaster declaration, declared, then that
the
could
fires
be
in California,
team. Yes.
For instance, yeah.
Yeah, over there, and then or you could be working for Cal Fire, and then they call you up, and you have set contracts for certain things, and then they would go, they would deploy. Our four-man team would go with the UTV, a truck, and then all of the equipment required, like a combi tool, so a tool that's able to cut cars as well as a spreader instead of carrying two tools. All of our high angle ropes equipment, backboards, our ability to reach out, go into tough terrain on steep slopes and pull injured firefighters out or people that may be evacuating from their remote homes. Our teams would be able to respond to do that. Now, that is a specialized team that we have a confined space training just here in the city that we're required to have too, because a lot of our water department stuff goes into confined space daily. Our teams are part of that. So they have everything from that, from high angle rescue to extrication training for vehicle machinery rescue. So
I'm talking about our local search and rescue organization here. And they do some of those same things, don't they? They have some of those specialized training.
They do have some of the specialized training, but our guys have the full scope, yes. So our local search and rescue, while the county does a great job with that, if they needed us, we would absolutely reach out and help them. Because from our Swiftwater side, we've expanded our Swiftwater rescue team as well. And with that comes with the capability. Like, we were on deck for the floods in Northern Oregon. Thankfully, they didn't need us. That means the people were doing okay. But we were on deck still for that, to run up there with our Swiftwater rescue team, which is the same group of that would be jumping on our REMS team as well.
All right. Well, it sounds like we're really reaching out, and everything I'm hearing is good use. That brings me back to equipment and level, and of course, the Hillcrest Fire Station has been talked about a lot.
Yes.
Where do we stand there?
One of the exciting things about the Hillcrest Fire Station is, everybody knows it's 1972. It needs to be replaced. It's got asbestos issues probably if we knocked it down, which they've said in the floor. I mean, you guys, everybody knows from that year, that's typically a standard issue. Yes, and that was in the recent in a Daily Courier article, which was true. The exciting thing, the other side of that coin, is this Friday, we're going to be doing a testimony at the state. I recently got contacted to go up there, and we submitted for a grant for a full replacement of the station that we're excited about. We're hoping to gain some traction about. We did it last year, now again, so we're going to get some face time up there and really show them and in contrast to how bad we need it here and public safety and how it would really help us, especially since that is an aging building. The infrastructure, it's not just like we can do a simple remodel. The infrastructure under it is original. The pipes, the plumbing and everything, all that is failing. The foundation's cracked out front. We have to get that repaired. So it's just past the date of just putting a little bit of money into it. It would just be putting some good money after bad at this point. So we've all been working together to seek other funds, other funding for that. And I'm going to be going up there on Friday to hopefully have them hear my voice and hopefully decide in the city of Grants Pass and for Grants Pass.
So there's a possibility we could get that fire station replaced completely with state money.
That is the goal.
That's the goal.
That is the goal. And we are trying everything we can as a city and as a fire department to make that happen.
Well, what's the price tag on that?
The latest numbers that we put together, I'm rounding, are $10 million. Yes, which would be fantastic.
So, and it's not only just about the replacement or the need to replace an aged building or infrastructure, because we have, in general, kept it up, but it just doesn't meet today's standards for firefighters. Things have changed since 1977 from an internal perspective, but also from an external perspective. If you look at calls for service, there is definitely merit for looking at a different location even than the location that it's served, because things have changed from since 1977 and our calls for service have changed.
All right. Well, that gives us a good spot to take a break here, and we'll follow up with that when we come back. In the meantime, I want you to know you're listening to KAJO, Grants Pass, Oregon. This is the Tuesday Talk Show. We'll come back after the news, so please stay tuned.
Now is the time to round up.
Welcome back, Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us. The phone lines are open. If you have a question or comment for our guest today, the number is 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air live and let you pose your question to either City Manager Aaron Kubik or Fire Chief Jimmy Sanchez, all online here with us, but talking about what's going on with the fire service. We have 6 new firefighters coming on board. Training begins the 23rd, and 8 weeks after that, we'll be up to, I was going to say full strength. Is full strength accurate, Jimmy?
Within our current policies and procedures, yes, we'll be up. They will still be on probation, which is normal, and we're expecting great things from this group as well. But for that whole year, and then a year from their date of hire, the 23rd, and then we will consider them. They will be able to drive our fire engines, because typically the first year, what we don't do, unless it's an extreme emergency, is we don't put them in the driver engineer role. So they're not going to be pumping our fires. They're not going to be driving the ladder truck and being utilized in that role, which is critical in our community.
You know, that's something that I just never had considered, what it takes to drive one of those huge machines that way accurately and safely and at the same time quickly to arrive on scene.
Yes.
That's very special training?
It is very special training. So not only do they have to go through a state certification, which requires weeks of training, and certification through our public safety department throughout the state, they come in to do specialized training on our units here with driver engineer Marty, who also has done a fantastic job building the system, because that is one of those things. Everybody has a special talent. He has a special talent with him and his team of our apparatus. So they do additional 2 weeks here with us, not to mention the everything that they have to sign off during their regular shift hours of just focusing on driving. Pumping is an art. It's a science. One of the things, too, people that don't understand, they think you just plug in water and then you turn it on and you get, if the pressure's too much,
sure. Yeah, right.
We're flying around, we're flopping in the sky. Oh. It'll lift you off the ground. depending on the size of the fire, how much gallons per minute do you need? And there's calculations for that as well, depending on if it's a commercial, residential. The other issue, too, is when you're using the ladder, there's a lot of risk with that. So the ladder truck that the city has awesome, that's been great in providing for us, you're flowing water from that, but you also need to know the weight limits. You need to know its capabilities, what you can reach, what you can't reach in the city, where to park it, how to drive it, because it's a big truck, and it can cause a lot of damage if you don't know how to use it properly. And that is all taken care of at our training facility and our area of familiarization, because there's some streets you can't even drive that truck on, and if you don't do the training, you'll get up there, you'll get stuck, as a simple example. So all of that gets taken care of within that year. So when they're done after that year, after February 23rd of 27, they'll be ready to run with those pieces of apparatus as well.
Fascinating. And if anybody out there has ever wanted to be a fireman, this is the place to call. You've got all the answers right here today.
Yes.
And I know there are lots of things that we could get into that would be really interesting. And, you know, just what you've outlined to us there, pumping is an art.
Mm-hmm.
These days, with all of the computers, is that easier than it used to be?
Arguably, I would say that there is some. It made it a little bit easier in some aspects, but more difficult in other. Because sometimes these computers, while they are great, it still requires a lot of vigilance from our driver engineers. Because the computer won't recognize the sounds or certain things that are going wrong within the pump panel behind that wall with the noise. So whether your RPMs are in a way, sometimes the computers you can pump at an RPM mode or a pressure mode, for example. But depending on if you're in the right setting, the computer's not going to tell you if you're pumping up a hill. So you have to increase that pressure. So the calculations, the firefighter, the driver engineer is still extremely, extremely important. Or if you're pumping downhill, because you could be pumping at 100 PSI, and depending on how far you are downhill, that guy on the nozzle could be hitting 175 PSI because he's fighting a fire down in the valley.
Gravity wins,
yeah. And that's for the driver engineer to calculate and know his unit very well as well. Plus, you have to know what's coming out of your city. So they're training not on that, but also our water system, our fire hydrants, depending on where you are in the city. As an example, one of the important things, really important part of a driver engineer, the truck will keep asking for water. It'll keep asking for it no matter what you do. You can cavitate and it'll break the whole pump and cost a couple hundred thousand dollars. But if you go below 20 PSI, that really, really important number, if you drop the pressure below 20 PSI, we have to issue a boil water notice, and nobody wants to do that. That is like a firefighter's worst thing.
Yeah.
That's it, because the atmospheric pressure is 14.7. So the benchmark is you do not drop any city water pump pressure below 20 PSI, because you want to make sure everybody's water stays clean. So all of this is in the head of a driver engineer while he's fighting a fire and rescuing people out and taking care of, or wildfire, or you have to make sure all of that is taken care of in the background.
Wow. So if you ever wanted to be a firefighter, this is a place to call today. We could go on like that forever and ever, but we really, in the first half hour, started talking a little bit about fires, the fire station, and you're headed up north to Salem to try to secure funds for a new station, $10 million dollars worth. We hope you've got a good shot for that. In the meantime, though, have we planned ahead, or is it going to be, from what I understand, just hearing you two talk, that the Hillcrest station would probably be totally replaced in another location? How far along are we on talking about that? Is that are we too soon to talk about those sorts of things?
Well, I think in general, we're looking for funding to have a replacement of Hillcrest.
Right.
And whether it be at or near that location or somewhere different, there are a number of variables that we have to look at. We have to look at a new design. The chief has done a great job of figuring out what the cost would be for that. We also need to look at, and it would be rightfully so, if we're going to be investing $10 million in a new facility, we need to make sure that investment is done to benefit the community to the best now and in the future. And that would be looking at service levels and locations and what would best serve the community for the next 30-plus years.
Oh, that station is, what, right at 50 years now, a little older than that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yep. Since 1972, yes, sir.
Okay, that's high math, but 30, mm-hmm. over 50 years easily.
And it looks it when you go inside, too. It really hasn't changed much in that amount of time.
No. It has the original kitchen cabinets, the original bathroom, the original flooring that, like I spoke about too, with some asbestos abatement issues, if we were to break into that and try to do a remodel. Some people have brought up the remodel portion, but then you add the asbestos abatement, everything, the cost just goes through the roof, so it becomes not the beneficial thing. The other thing about the station too, like you said about what it looks like, I like to tell people, have you ever seen the movie Apollo 13? And you look at how they were launching in to go to the moon. Our control panel in the main front lobby looks just like that. It's actually just the big push buttons and stuff. And we actually tried to have it updated from some electricians and stuff, because it's required for our bay doors and everything. And they told us they can't update it because it's so old. They would have to replace the entire thing because they would be chasing all of that old electrical code and all that stuff. So it's at a point where even our paging system for 911, our firefighters now have personal pagers that we had to buy separately that they have to wear, because the paging system in the station, and we tried to have that corrected as well, completely needs a complete gut and remodel because they'd be chasing what we like to call electrical gremlins. So we have been able to rectify that with a personal pager on them that they have to carry around the station at all times, including at night, versus our newer stations and the up to date best practices that also help with our firefighter health and dispatching, where it pages throughout the station, even in the bathrooms and the showers, and there's different ways of how it comes on. It'll open the bay doors. It can change the traffic light. It's a safer thing for the community as well as for the firefighters, and waking them up as well, making sure that their health, because us being up every night, all night listening to the radio, has shown years down the line through data and studies that is a big contributing factor to heart disease and 5 to 7 year life expectancy after we retire, unfortunately.
All right. Well, we've talked about a lot of the things that are positive today and some of the things that are negative and that we're working to fix. But right now, you're talking to the people out there. How safe should they feel with the fire department right here? What all do you provide for those people out there listening?
Well, that's a great question. Our team is fantastic. And I don't just say this because I'm not from here originally. So I take this. I want to take that collective of where I've come from and traveled around. We have such a well-trained, highly trained team. And one of the things that I'd like to highlight that we've done in the last year is, while they did do a lot of training, not all of it was recorded, but just as an example in the last year, from coming up to the best practices and new standards, in 2024, they had about 2,700 hours of training hours logged. In 2025, a 220% increase, they logged 8,776 hours of training.
Wow.
That includes training within our teams at our training facility, working with our mutual aid partners. Increasing our EMS capabilities as well. We've already done a lot of it. Our next steps, the controlled substances portion, is coming soon. But now when we show up on scene, we can do everything that you would expect any fully ALS-capable department to do. And we're managing getting that steps, those last pieces together. From the new equipment that the city's partners with us on, from the wildfire, the UTV as well, what you've seen in the parade, we've been able to respond already. We've pulled people off Dollar Mountain, put other fires out that we would have had easy access to, so we've gotten to them sooner and faster with our team. So I would argue that within our jurisdictional boundary, that there's no one better than us in this state. I would really argue that, and that's why we're chasing that ISO Class 1. And with these improvements with EMS, the other thing that we've included as well from Deputy Chief Hyatt as the prevention side, and us working together, inspections fell off after COVID, which was a thing, which everybody saw. No one was, face-to-face contact. That was a huge issue. But we've increased that. Now all of our teams are going out and getting in every business and every office, and you'll see them out there more. They've all been assigned, and it's increased a couple 100% already in the last few months. Those numbers are coming up, especially with these new add-on people. Now, everything you'll see from the exit signs, the simple things, I don't want the community to freak out, but that also increases public safety, because when our guys show up, they've seen the building already before. They've been in there. They know what to look for. They can close their eyes and they can search that building, which is realistic when there's smoke and fire, because they've already walked it. They've already seen the hazards. They've seen what they need to do, where people would traditionally congregate. And that has increased the public safety in the city tremendously. So I would argue that we are the best in the state, if not the nation. I'm not just saying that because I work here. They do a great job.
Okay. Our chief engineer almost panicked today when he saw the street fire chief here. I just had my inspection. All right. So what kind of calls did the fire department really get? And people out there might not realize all of the things that you all do. For instance, I've heard that if an elderly person falls, they can call a fire department to get to be helped up. Is that right?
Yes. So our team, from a community service standpoint, so we will do, we call them lift assists. So our team will go out. We do run a lot of lift assists. Now, what we do, though, that we don't want to have the public use us as a primary person as a lift assist. Now, we will always go out and help. That is our job. We love serving the community. But then we start, if it becomes a thing where it's a regular thing, we start directing them to the services that they need. Because it becomes, unfortunately, as you get older, sometimes you fall a lot more. Your health gets poor, and we direct you to those services within our community to receive that help. So that, because we can't be relied on 24/7 to be there for you every day, 6-7 times a day. While we will show up and we will take care of you, we also help you within our community for that. The EMS portion, we respond to all hazards, everything from hazmat to EMS to fire to vehicle accidents to unfortunately, so violence in the community. We're there to help out with that alongside PD for any injuries or anything that happens, to recovery, our Swiftwater rescue team, to rescue in the water. You name it, high angle rescue, confined space. If you can think of it, we will be there.
All right. Fire Chief Jimmy Sanchez, we're going to take a little break, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back right after this word.
Amy Fox at
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Tuesday Talk Show in Progress. I'm Fire Chief Jimmy Sanchez, City Manager Aaron Kubik in studio with us here. And we've got about 8 minutes left here of this program today, gentlemen. I want to thank you very much for your time. Chief Sanchez, is there anything that we need to know about your fire department that we haven't asked today? You've been very generous with your time and knowledge today. We certainly appreciate that. But as we find out, it's more extensive than you could imagine.
Well, thank you for saying that. One thing I would like to say about our team is that is not normally highlighted outside of everything we talked about from prevention, EMS, training, what we're starting with our REMS team and our deployments, which we traditionally haven't done, our guys going out and doing the deployments. It's not just the cost. We actually get reimbursed for it, so that's a nice thing for the city to know. But the important thing, too, is that our team alongside our city, too, is – as an example, they don't get highlighted a lot for when there is a structure fire and there's a family in need. They actually have a separate fund that's outside of city taxpayer dollars that the guys have put together, that our guys and gals have put together, that where they put them up in hotels. They give them some gift cards that they keep in with them that they have access to through their union portion of that. And I like to highlight that because that's not a normal thing.
Now, this isn't coming out of taxpayer dollars.
No.
This is coming out of firefighters' pockets.
This is firefighters' pockets. This is our team's pockets that they could use for whatever they want. They chose to donate to this fund. They do this every year. and they go and they help out people in need. So when they're on a call and they see something really sad, I mean, there's examples of them buying bunk beds. They saw a family not too long ago that I showed up on, and they bought bunk beds and built them at the house for a family that needed it for their children. There's examples of them putting multiple people over the last year in hotels for a couple nights, giving them gift cards to go shopping at Walmart because they lost all of their clothes. And I would love to highlight that part. That's the kind of people we have here in the city, and that's the kind of team we have in our firefighters just supporting the city. And that's above and beyond just the public safety aspect that they take care of every day. And I would like to make sure that the community is aware of that.
All right. Well, golly, I'm impressed. More and more, every time I hear you, Chief Sanchez, I come out and think, I want to be a fireman. But at any rate, if there is people out there who wants to be a fireman, what path should they take right now if I want to eventually become part of the Grants Pass Fire and Rescue?
So I would recommend being a firefighter. I love it. Maybe because I'm sitting in this uniform, but I'm also second generation. But the path that they can take to start is public service, because public service is – it really is a specialized area, because you really have to have that compassion for the community and that willingness to serve, because some days you really are shoveling some manure. And I say that honestly, because you're cleaning up with whatever you have to do to all of a sudden you're, you know, fighting fire. And that has to be a passion for you to serve. With that, you start your public service early, enjoy volunteering around the community, get to know the community, the needs of the community. Then you're going to start with your education. You're going to go for your EMT, Rogue College is the best place to go locally for that as well, RCC. And when you go change your EMT and then you do your firefighter program there, and then once that happens within the state of Oregon, you can get on through your volunteer agency, which will train you the rest of the way for your firefighter too, and your wildland applications. There's so many certs that go along with it. So within about a year and a half, depending on how fast you want to do it, you can be certified from an EMT firefighter standpoint. And then you can continue to expand upon your career into paramedic, which I would highly recommend, because the need here, a majority of our calls, 70 to 80% of our calls are EMS, which is good, because we do have, that's a trend in that direction with the newer construction. We make it more resilient to fire, right? Mm-hmm. We don't want everything burning down like in the old days. So we are there to take care of those and those wildfire aspects. But the EMS portion of it as well and the paramedicine is a big deal too, to make sure we help. And all of our guys do that with the EMT background. So they can take that path. Our high school has a program here, which give a shout out to Colby Taylor, who does that with our high school team. They come in from Grants Pass High. Shout out to them. And they participate with us with exercises as well at Hillcrest at our training facility. And they get that medical background, the mass casualty incident background, as well as kind of a start to jumping into that medicine side before they jump into fire. Now, state-wise, I cannot bring you into live fire or do any specialized fire training. We can do the book work and stuff, but until you're 18, because there is an inherent risk with putting you into some of those immediate danger at life hazard atmospheres. So,
all right, but if I'm 18 plus, is there, I'm not sure, an intern problem, an intern situation?
There is. I'm excited to talk about that. I appreciate you asking. So we have a local community partner who has agreed to fund our student firefighter program, which the city, unfortunately, through stuff that happened, you know, with funding and everything, COVID and all that stuff, it had to be taken care of for a little bit. But now we have a private funder who also donated our Swiftwater rescue boat, which is really exciting. So we are going to be starting out our student firefighter program here soon. And with that, we are going to be starting with three. So the applications, I'll be making all kinds of announcements. We're excited. The team's excited. We're going to start up with three student firefighter application process. And that is where the city's going to partner through this private funder from our community, who is awesome, and who the city manager helped bring by to. I got to give him credit because he's friends with them as well. Is going to be able to fund three. We'll be paying for their fire, their EMS, everything to become full-fledged while they're able to work alongside our crews and get that experiences that that is required that will help them perform better within their career.
All right,
hopefully they'll choose us.
Do you want to share a name, or is it a commercial entity? Or
Go ahead. He didn't tell me no.
Ron Loins is the local gentleman who has been very generous for our fire department.
Yes.
All right. Well,
thank you, Ron. Ron and Sue.
Ron and Sue.
And Ron. They're fantastic. And they and our Swiftwater Rescue boat as well from them. The advances we've had in Swiftwater Rescue are because of them as well.
So. All right. Chief, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Aaron, final couple of minutes here.
One of the things also is what the chief mentioned is those that are definitely know that that's the path they want to go. But if you're not quite sure, there is an opportunity where they could do a ride along.
Yes.
And that's a great opportunity for even youth or whatever. If you're truly, do I want to do this? What is it like to be a firefighter on a daily basis or a police officer or whatever? We do have ride along opportunities, and that's a great way for you to get an inside look at what it takes and what they do on a regular basis.
All right. Aaron, thank you very much. One final question. Do I have to give Chief Hensman equal time?
Well, you know they're very competitive.
I understand that.
So it might be next month. I might have Chief Hensman with me. I'm not sure.
He'd be welcome. He'd be welcome.
You let me know, and I'll make sure I do a fire inspection right at his time.
You heard it here, folks. Thank you both very much. We appreciate your time. And to all of you, stay tuned. More to come right here on KAJO Radio. You've been listening to the Tuesday Talk Show. Grand old.